Welcome to All Sides with Dan Fisher. There's a good reason that those cute kitten and silly cat videos go viral on YouTube. Domestic cats apparently are more popular than dogs in the pet department. A third of U.S. households own at least one cat, a total of roughly 86.4 million in the country. Joining us now to talk about cats and cat care are two experts, Dr. Charles Anthony Buffington. He's a professor of clinical nutrition in the Department of Veterinary Clinical Sciences at Ohio State University. He was the first to identify the role of acid-base balance in foods and urinary stone formation in cats, resulting in the reformulation of most cat diets. He also created the Indoor Cat Initiative at the OSU Veterinary Medical Center, a program to enrich the lives of indoor cats. Welcome to the show, Tony.
Glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Also with us is veterinarian Nikki Hurd from the Northwest Animal Hospital in Columbus. She is one of only 75 veterinarians in the country who is board certified in feline practice and was among the 8 veterinarians asked to research and develop the feline behavior guidelines for the American Association of Feline Practitioners. Welcome to the show, Nikki.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
To our listeners, do you have cats? Do you have a cat? Do you have any questions about your cat/cats? We have two experts in the studio right now ready to answer your questions. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Don't worry, I have plenty of questions myself, but we would love to hear from you guys, too. And you can go to the Facebook page, the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page, or you can tweet at Ann Fisher WOSU if that's more convenient. So let's start at the beginning. Besides looks, which is how I've always chosen my cats in the past, I like long hair, feathery type of cats. How do you decide on what cat to get? With dogs, it's more obvious. There's certain traits. If you know the background at all of the dog and you can deduce certain things. But with cats, it just seems to be about looks. Tony, what do you do?
I think it's the way you pick a relationship with most other things is what you like. And some cats are more active and outgoing, and some are quieter. And so just giving some thought to those kinds of things is helpful.
And you can tell that when you just go into the Humane Society, which are much more elaborate nowadays, the good ones are, in terms of how they're presenting the cats. But, Nikki, can you just tell by looking at them?
That's not so easy to do, actually. A lot of the cats that are in shelters are in different situations. They're stressed out cats. Some of them are shut down cats. Any cat that is rather timid is going to be more timid and held back, and yet they could be an absolutely lovely pet. Because so many shelters are now using fosters, you do get a better sense of personality through that. And again, personality is something that you tend to see as time evolves. So it changes from the moment that you see that cat.
And a lot of people get cats or get their first cat or think a cat's going to be a better fit because they're not home very often. But that's kind of a miscalculation. Cats need attention just like dogs do. Their behavior can affect their behavior more, maybe not as much and in the same way.
Not as much and not in the same way. Cats are a more independent species than dogs are. And so as long as their physical environment is structured so that their needs are met and there's nothing in their environment that they're afraid of, they can handle it pretty well.
614-292-8513. You can give us a call if you want to hear from our experts in the studio today. Nikki Hurd, veterinarian and feline specialist from the Northwest Animal Hospital in Columbus. And also Tony Buffington. He's a professor of clinical nutrition in the Department of Veterinary Clinical Sciences at Ohio State University. Angela and Hilliard, you're on All Sides with Ann Fisher. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I have 3 cats, a 12-year-old, a 7-year-old, and a 5-year-old. And over the course of the past year, the 7-year-old has had 2 sterile bladder infections, but it's caused her to mark everywhere in the house, and she's ruining carpet and furniture, and we don't know how to fix it.
Anyone want to jump in? Nikki?
Sure. What have you done so far?
Well, we've been treating all of the areas, of course, but we've taken her to the vet, and, you know, the vet keeps telling us that sometimes this happens in older cats. She had had the crystals that were forming, and they got rid of the cysts or the crystals or whatever that were forming in her bladder. But none of the behavior has changed since then. And they keep telling us there's no actual infection. It might just be stress, but we don't know how to de-stress her. We have 2 of those pheromone diffusers.
Those are excellent.
In our And we have 4 litter boxes. You know, my husband keeps them very clean. And like I said, we've had these cats for years. There's nothing new that's happened in the last year.
So you haven't been able to identify anything that has changed that might have triggered this, the change? Nothing that has changed within yourselves as well? Moves, time away, visitors.
Health issues.
Health issues.
In the human health issues?
No, sure.
Cats that are outdoors.
No, nothing significant.
Interesting.
Nothing that hasn't been going on for years.
Well, again, what we always work to do is try to improve the situation and change it so there's not as much stress, even if you can't identify that additional stressor for the cat, that you've got those litter boxes and food resources in separate places, right, so that there's avoidance there. And what are the places that are being sprayed on?
She has urinated on a couch, a chair, once or twice in our bedroom, my daughter's bedroom, any place where there is a pile of clean or dirty laundry. We can't have open baskets anymore.
Mm.
Anything that looks soft where she can, I assume it's hiding the fact that she's marking. I mean, even if we leave the blankets on the bed bunched up and we don't make the bed, she'll urinate on the bed.
I don't see that so much as hiding. They're still looking for places that are comfortable. Obviously, we're not going to solve your cat's particular problem with this phone call, but as well as getting an excellent history, which we can't do right now, and you're doing many of the things that need to be done. There are also medications that help serve some cats in decreasing the stress in their lives, even if you can't identify it.
Okay. Is it appropriate to ask for that from the vet?
Certainly.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Good luck, Angela.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. We're talking about cats this hour with a couple of experts. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. Vivian in the Short North, ouch, is all I can say to your question. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. How are you?
Good, thank you.
I would like to know, my 3-year-old Siamese cat has a cracked canine. The bottom of it's broken off. I've had her since she was 2.5 or 3. She used to be a barn cat. Anyways, she's declawed. Her front paws are declawed. But she whines a lot, and I'm wondering, does she need to get that canine tooth out? I mean, she doesn't seem like it's bothering her like a normal toothache would. I mean, it doesn't seem to bother her. Does she need to get it pulled? Or
any ideas, Tony?
When you said she whines, are those related to the tooth? And so I was thinking when you were saying that it was related, and that you related that in some way to her tooth problem. Is that, do I have that
no.
right?
No, she's just a noisy Siamese cat. She acts bored a lot, but I mean, she doesn't seem like she's in pain.
Yeah.
Your veterinarian
needs to look at it. I mean, we can't tell over the radio what it looks like, and so the next time you go to the veterinarian, I'd have it looked at.
Well, I mean, animals react differently to pain, or they the outward signs of it are not always obvious. And I think if I cracked the top of my tooth off, it would hurt. Like, I'll get out. I mean, it's an exposed nerve, unless the nerve's dead.
Exactly. It's been there a while. It's really just conjecture until you have somebody take a look at it, get an X-ray, see what's going on. From the point of view of acting bored, we have a whole website on how to enrich indoor environments.
Yeah, we're going to get into that, too.
Okay.
That we'll talk about a little bit later.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
All right, Vivian, take care. I feel after a lot of these calls, I'm going to say, good luck. Good luck. Good luck, Vivian. Let's see. This is a good question. Amy in Granville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
Just wanted to say I have a question. And Dr. Hurd used to be our veterinarian until we moved to Granville. So she's a great vet.
Thank you.
Sure. How does catnip work, and why do cats like it so much?
How does catnip work?
Stump the veterinarian.
No, catnip's got a chemical compound in it called Nepacadolone or something like that. I have to look it up to remember the exact name of it. But it, just like some compounds in humans, creates a mild state of euphoria in cats, just makes them feel good. Not all cats are responsive to it. It's completely safe as far as we can tell. One of the things I think is interesting is some cats respond to very different forms. So some cats will, like any kind of catnip, some only fresh, some only dry. And so we had a cat for years that I thought didn't like catnip until I brought a fresh plant home and she ate the whole plant.
So. And it is about 50-50.
Yeah. Huh, okay. Does that help, Amy?
Sure. Great, okay. Thank you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Take care.
Bye.
Frances in New Albany, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I have a little guy who's about 3 years old, and about the last 6 months or so, he's gotten really dandruffy, and I've tried putting oil on his food, and he refuses to eat it when there's oil on it, so I don't know what else to do with him. If I brush or comb him, of course, it raises more dander, so that's the last thing I want to do. Do you have any suggestions?
So is your cat itchy at all?
No. He doesn't seem to be itchy, but he's got a lot of flakes on his black skin, on his black fur.
And have you given him a bath at all?
Yes. I took him to a groomer to give him a bath, and I was kind of hoping he would come back with no dander on his fur, but he did.
Okay.
So that didn't seem to help.
Well, there are a lot of reasons for dandruff, and one of the ones you need to exclude is that he could have walking dandruff or Collariella mites. So a veterinary visit is in order.
That's a bug.
That's a bug.
Okay.
That's a mite, yeah.
Really?
Many cats are itchy with that, and your cat isn't, but that doesn't exclude it as a possibility. And then, of course, there's just some basic skin conditions, dry skin that could be improved.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. I'll take Romeo in.
Good plan.
All right, Frances, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. We're talking about cats this hour with Nikki Hurd. She's a veterinarian and a feline specialist from the Northwest Animal Hospital in Columbus. Also with us, Tony Buffington. He's a professor of clinical nutrition in the Department of Veterinary Clinical Sciences at Ohio State University. And we are going to be talking about his indoor pet initiative. It's a program at OSU. It's not just for cats either. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Tom Ashbrook, host of NPR's On Point. Behind the news, there are real people with something to say. We bring them to you. Roundtable conversations with coal miners, the out-of-work soldiers, their families, and more. Honest conversations about the issues with the people who live their reality. It's fresh perspective you won't hear anywhere else. Join us for the next On Point.
And On Point begins this afternoon at 1 on today's On Point. There seems to like big troubled times, and Noam Chomsky joins On Point to give us his take on everything from the Occupy movement to the Arab Spring. That discussion at 1 on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from AFS Intercultural Programs, looking for host families for high school exchange students arriving from all around the world in August. Details at afsusa.org.
74 degrees in downtown Columbus with showers and thunderstorms likely today, a high of 78. Showers are likely for tonight, maybe a pop-up thunderstorm, a low of 67 degrees. Still a chance of rain on Tuesday, then cloudy skies and a high of 83. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. We're talking about Cats This Hour with Tony Buffington. He's a professor of clinical nutrition in the Ohio Department of Veterinary Clinical Sciences at OSU. And also Nikki Hurd. She's a veterinarian and feline specialist from the Northwest Animal Hospital in Columbus. Cats are the most popular pet in the country, just narrowly beating dogs, really, but more cats live with other cats than dogs live with other dogs. So there you go. 614-292-8513 is the number to call if you'd like to speak to us. You can also email us at allsides at WOSU.org. Whatever it is in catnip, it's called nepetalic tone. Nepet, N-E-P-E-T-A-L-A-C-T-O-N-E. That's the...
sort of based on the salvia nepeta, isn't that the name of the plant?
Nepetalactone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. All right. So let's talk about the Indoor Pet Initiative, the program at OSU that you started, Tony. It is not just for cats, but it's about taking care of and helping out indoor pets with what they need from life.
Well, exactly. And you're right. It's got dogs on it now. We've done some work with rabbits. We're going to expand it to people because actually the environmental enrichment is all about the same. We developed it actually because I was studying a chronic disease syndrome in cats, and we found that when we changed their environment, their disease process got a lot better, which was very surprising, and we've published on that and studied.
When I was reading about that, it wasn't what you weren't expecting to even go in that direction.
No.
Right. I thought that was interesting.
No. When we got into this disease 20 years ago, it was thought to be a disease of the urinary bladder, and it also the same disease, as far as we can tell, occurs in humans. And over time and a whole lot of experiments, we found out that changing the environment resulted in the cats getting a lot better. And it wasn't just with their urinary signs. It was they have skin signs, or if they had hairballs, all of those kinds of things improved, which led us to the idea that this is a brain disease affecting the body rather than the other way around. And that disease probably starts very early in life.
Getting back to, very quickly, the call about the woman with the
right.
cat with dandruff, could that be a stress-related manifestation?
It could be. And,
okay.
But the challenge is that, just as Nikki said, there's 10 other things it could be,
too. Why can't they talk?
And you have to sort of work through that. But in human medicine, there's whole textbooks on psychodermatology.
Right.
So it's pretty common.
So tell us about the Indoor Pet Initiative. What do you see? What do you have going on over there?
Well, what it is an information resource. We've got questionnaires so people can look through their environment to see what might be going on, specific recommendations on how people can inform themselves about what it means to have an enriched environment for an indoor house cat and also dogs, and then how they can make that happen.
So what do cats' environments in general, what do they need, Nikki?
They need activity. They need something for their brain to do. And so having devices to climb on and up is important. It mimics going back to their days being outside and climbing trees. And it also gives them a perch from which to watch the world. They spend a lot of time in hunting behavior naturally, and so they can watch the squirrels and the birds, all those good things. We can mimic that with food and food puzzles by putting kibble in. You can make a treasure hunt. You can put them in devices that are sold. There are many ways to add to that so that there's some interest going on in their life besides when you're there.
A lot of people get a cat because they think they're not very active if they're indoors.
Yes, and actually not having enough, you need the right amount of activity. Not enough isn't good, so environments that we call barren, where there's nothing to do, aren't good for animals. And also if they're too unstable or too chaotic or too unpredictable. I think one of the things that's helped us think about this is indoor housed animals are really zoo animals, and because they're confined, and so they depend on us for everything. And the argument about indoor-outdoor is equivalent to the argument, should we have zoos or not? And reasonable people can disagree on that. Our point has been, if we're going to keep animals in this way, how can we do the best possible management and husbandry for them?
I also think that it's important to play with your cat. Many people just think, oh, I'll groom it, I'll love it, and they don't think about the activity end of it. And it's true, when you play with the cat, it's not like you go out and you play with your dog and you throw the ball for an hour. When you play with your cat, it's a couple minutes at a time, because that's their hunting speed. You chase something down, you're done. You're a sprinter. So the feather on a stick, anything that promotes that hunting, chasing sort of thing is good. My cat is particularly fond of a stuffed mouse that makes a natural squeaky noise. The other day I came home, I looked and saw that stuffed mouse was in the bedroom. It was actually a real mouse. It looked just like the stuffed mouse that he hadn't quite knocked off. So,
Well, this reminds me of the night I let my cat in. This is in college, and in the middle of the night, and I never would do that without checking again because she dragged in
trophies,
the entrails of something. Mm. I don't really know what it was, but I slept with it all night long. It was her gift to me. Were you going to say something, Tony? I'm sorry.
Well, I think Nikki makes an important point about activity and cats. Now, most of their play activity is prey-like or hunting-like behavior. And cats hunt different things. They hunt birds, bugs, and small rodents. And some cats prefer one or the other. And one of the things that we've found is that finding out what your cat likes really helps their perception of coping and predictability in the environment. So you can see if the cat doesn't like to play with a piece of string, it might not like bird toys. You can roll a piece of food across the floor, and if it likes that, it might like bug toys. And so you can ask the cat what its preferences are and then build on that.
I have a client that comes in with a very old cat who is stressed and relatively aggressive in the veterinary scenario, and she takes her iPhone and turns on a YouTube video of birds chirping, and that cat settles right down. I've also shown my cat a video and noticed that there were portions of that video that the cat would, you know, look at and others not. So my cat preferred rodents to fish.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. It's a very odd thing when you watch cats watch those play videos for cats, uh-huh. is that when there's something they don't attend to, it's like the screen went blank.
It's like they're just not picking it up.
That's what it looks like. Where if it's something that they like, they're just glued to the screen. So just as you described on the phone, I hadn't thought about doing it on a phone before, but why not?
I hadn't. That was another use of the smartphone.
Steve in Groveport, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Steve. Hi, Steve.
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I have a question about the dietary needs of elderly cats.
Okay.
I have an 18-year-old domestic short hair, and her quality of life is starting to diminish a bit. And she's having some problems with loose stools. Appetite's not so great. And I wonder what I can do to maybe stimulate her appetite a bit. And is there something I'm missing in her dietary needs that she's older now?
Well, without knowing what kind of health problems that she might have, it's hard to make a specific recommendation. But what I tell my students, because I'm sort of headed in that direction myself, is that old age per se is not a disease, and most of the commercially available diets are completely satisfactory for healthy adult animals, regardless of their age. Now, sometimes what is different about old age is that it's more likely to have some disease process, and then finding a diet that can accommodate whatever those disease limitations are can be useful for the cat. And the other thing I wanted to mention is that one of the things that as cats get really old, if you've got some ideas about what their favorite foods are, that is often the best appetite stimulant you can have, is to give them something that they really like. And that you know that. And I always, and anytime I'm going to do that or try to change a diet, I always offer it as a choice in a separate container at food time. Because if your cat does have a health problem and the veterinarian prescribes a particular diet, if you take its old food away or mix the two foods, sometimes that can frighten the cat to the point that it won't eat anything. And that's the last thing we want to have happen.
Well, we make sure she sees her vet regularly. She's on methimazole, 40 milliliters a day. Some health issues, so all her blood work's up to date, and we've just not found anything that really will stimulate her appetite. A few years ago, it started to diminish, and we leave dry food out all the time and offer her wet food twice a day, and it still doesn't seem to quite pique her interest. I mean, she'll nibble at it, lick the gravy, but it doesn't have that gusto of appetite that she once had.
Mm-hmm. Is she continuing to lose weight?
She is skinny. I mean, if you look at her, I mean, her hair is fluffy enough where you couldn't see her ribs. She's about a 7-pound cat, and it's kind of stable there, but she doesn't have much room for wiggle, if you know what I mean. If her appetite even decreased more, I'd be afraid for her.
Yeah, there's no way to predict what any animal's preferences are. What we've found is just trying to offer different kinds of foods to the cat and see what it prefers.
Yeah, Yeah, we had one that passed away a few years ago that was 18, and she ended up with a preference of white tuna, which was an expensive meal for a couple of years, but it was worth it.
Oh, sure. And that's it. Feeding them something of even a food that might not be perfect for them is better than having them not eat anything of a completely balanced food. So different kinds of meats and fish sources, not just cat foods, but human foods as well, can give you an idea of preference.
Thank you, Steve.
And lastly, I'll ask you, is there any dietary supplement that we should consider for an elderly cat?
No.
Okay.
The supplement, the animal diets are supplemented in the food, and so we don't need to add additional things.
Okay. Take care, Steve. 614-292-8513 if you want to give us a call. We're talking about cats this hour with Nikki Hurd. She's a veterinarian and a feline specialist from the Northwest Animal Hospital in Columbus. Also, Tony Huffington, I'm sorry, Buffington. He is a professor of clinical nutrition in the Department of Veterinary Clinical Sciences at OSU. We have an email from George in New Albany. He wants to know, is there a breed of cats that is particularly intelligent? Any thoughts on that?
Don't have a particular breed that I would say, because I consider cats to be very intelligent.
Overall,
they are a very sharp critter. They don't train like we are accustomed to training dogs, and some people think that's not intelligent, but that just isn't the case. More their situation is one of whether they move a lot. So if you're looking for a breed, because some people associate activity with intelligence, then those lean breeds like Abyssinians and Siamese are in that order.
More active. Mm-hmm. Tony, agreed?
Nope, I agree. Yep.
Okay, then Linda in Hoover Reservoir. Welcome to the show, Linda.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. I just have a question about feral cats. I have one, maybe two. They might be siblings, although one is always here and one is gone for days and then suddenly reappears. I'm planning on trying to live trap and take at least the one in that's here all the time and have it fixed. I don't know the sex yet because I haven't gotten that close. I'm just wondering if I don't want to just release it because we are like full of coyotes here, and that's how I lost my last cat several years ago. So to just leave it out in the woods is scary. Any suggestions?
What do you do with a feral cat? Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks, Linda.
That's a very challenging question. Given that the shelters can't take in unlimited number of cats, and most of those cats are destined for adoption or rescue in some way, shape, or form, I have had some folks who have been very committed to finding a place for their feral cat, and they have gone through the process of catching them, vaccinating them, and making the necessary arrangements to take them to best friends out in Utah. That's a rather expensive proposition.
Okay. Oops. Sorry, Linda, I disconnected you. Thank you for the call. We have an email from Stephanie. Last Thursday, I found a kitten approximately 9 weeks old. She's eating salad food with no issue. I found it on my porch. There were two, according to my neighbor kids, but I could not locate the other one. I brought her into my home where I have three older cats, two females about 18 to 20 months. They were born in my home, and a male that is 9 to 10 years. My male is fixed. My females are not yet. The male does not go near the kitten, and one of the females refuses to have anything to do with the kitten other than hissing. The other female is slightly more amenable to the little thing. What can I do to help the transition? Tony?
Protect the little one. So that it's very hard to know what the relationship of the other three cats, and what I usually tell people is cats living inside a house, and of course we don't know much about what's going on here, or like teenagers living inside a house. They can, you know, they can get along with each other, but they need plenty of their own space. And imagine introducing another teenager. That kitten's going to be perceived as an intruder. And so making sure that all the cats have a complete set of resources that are out of sight of all the other ones, just like giving all the teenagers their own room, is a good place to start. Putting the putting the kitten in a separate area so that the other cats can get to know what's around across a door or something like that so that it's completely safe is pretty important.
But it won't be invading their space.
And it's not invading their space. And don't expect too much too fast. I mean, cats a lot of times end up getting along fine in houses, but they're not all laying on top of each other. So
those are just on YouTube.
Yes.
Okay.
Which is why they're there.
Right, because they're special. Okay. Let's get to a call now.
I go ahead and recommend taking a soft cloth and wiping from cat to cat so that you give them that communal smell, because they do recognize each other by smell in good part. And so there's an abundance of glands in the face, the rump, on the feet. And going cat to cat to cat, you don't have to have the cats in the same place at the same time when you do that, day after day. And then the flip side of that, while you're keeping your kitten separate, and there's investigation underneath the door, sometimes put the big cats away and let the kitten have the run. So again, that smell gets associated, so you get some of that indirect experience. And when you do get around to introducing one kitten, one cat, and pick the most logical, likely successful pair for that.
Start with that. Mike in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Welcome.
We have a cat that's about 5 years old and adopted us about 3 years ago. And we've taken the cat to the vet. In fact, we let him live on our porch probably for about 3 months before we took the cat in. I thought he might have a rightful owner and he'd find his way to that owner, but he obviously didn't. I think somebody must have dropped him in this neighborhood, and like I say, he adopted us. It turns out that this cat has chylothorax disease, and he hyperventilates fairly often. And I've taken them to veterinary hospitals, and it's cost me almost $2,000. And they didn't really offer much of a resolution in terms of getting better for this cat. And they said that they could potentially maybe drain the fluid from around his lungs, but last time I was at the vet, she said she was afraid she'd get him in the heart, and that would be the end of him.
Could we first talk about what is chylothorax, for those of us who...
Chylothorax is the drainage of lymph into a cavity, and it is not a good thing in a cat. So they are right. It does not have a good prognosis. Drainage provides that cat with immeasurable comfort, because if the fluid is in the chest, then the lungs can't expand and you can't breathe well. And so drainage is a way to do that. If their veterinarian isn't comfortable doing that, seeing a specialist, having ultrasound-guided drainage of that fluid would provide that cat the means. And perhaps having drained it and with ultrasound, they could see what might be going on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But drainage is a short-term solution because it's just going to refill. It's the fluids that leak out of the blood vessels during metabolism that are picked up by a separate set of vessels, the lymph glands, and then recirculated back into the bloodstream in the chest. And if it doesn't go back, if the lymph doesn't re-enter the blood circulation, then it just fills up in the chest.
Okay, Mike.
Thank you.
Take care. Good luck.
Goodbye.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We'll be right back. This is...
This is 89.7 NPR News. The 1883 eruption of Krakatoa, which occurred in present-day Indonesia, is the second greatest volcanic eruption in recorded history. More than 36,000 people were killed, and the explosion was heard more than 5,000 miles away. Wednesday night on WOSU-TV, watch the dramatic story of the eruption, a family trying to escape the devastation, and a ship that is trapped at sea by the phenomenon. Watch Krakatoa: The Last Days. It's Wednesday night at 10 on WOSU-TV.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Noble on Long Condos, offering homeownership opportunities in the King Lincoln District, featuring a diverse community with a mix of historic and newly built homes and condos. Details at homeportohio.org/nobleonlong.
74 degrees with showers and thunderstorms likely today, a high of 78. Rain likely tonight with still a chance of a thunderstorm, a low of 67 degrees. There's a chance of showers and thunderstorms on Tuesday, otherwise cloudy skies and a high of 83. And then sunshine looking ahead to Wednesday with a high of 78. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We are talking about cats this hour with two experts, Nikki Hurd. She's a veterinarian and feline specialist from the Northwest Animal Hospital in Columbus. And also Tony Buffington. He's a professor of clinical nutrition in the Department of Veterinary Clinical Sciences at Ohio State University. He started the Indoor Pet Initiative. It's a program at OSU. We'll have a link to that for you at our website at wosu.org/allsides if you're interested in finding out what you can do for your indoor pet that'll make them the happiest. Let's get to JC in Cleveland. You're on the air. Welcome to the show, JC.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm interested to know if there's any new developments on stomatitis in cats. I have a 15-year-old cat. He weighs 15 pounds, and he's on steroids. And when infection gets bad, he's on prednisone. And I'd like to know what's new, if they're close to a cure, and how long the steroids will shorten his life.
Now, stomatitis, it's a gum infection?
Right.
Right? Okay. Mm-hmm.
Generalized mouth infection, yeah.
Okay.
So has there been a biopsy for that particular mouth?
Pardon?
Has there been a biopsy, a sample of tissue that was taken and sent to a pathologist to identify what might be driving that?
No. The vets seem to be knowledgeable and diagnose the stomatitis. And the antibiotics, and when it gets really bad, his mouth smells really bad. He takes Flagyl, and that helps him for quite a while, and then it'll come back up again.
So,
then again, we're always looking for underlying disease. So whether that's periodontal disease, and these are teeth that need to be scaled and cleaned twice a year, whether there's lymphocytic, plasmacytic, so infiltration of inflammatory cells that are driving that is immune-based and often is controlled by steroids, or if there's some other process, if the cat is, to be sure, negative for feline leukemia and feline immunodeficiency virus, diseases that cause immunosuppression and aggravate that.
Okay.
He's been tested for those things, so okay. I'm pretty sure it is stomatitis. He's 5 years old now, and I adopted him.
You said
him.
Five.
Five, yeah. I adopted him from a rescue, APL, at 2 years old. And I think he had been returned, and the vet knew the cat because he, right away knew what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to know how to help him, if there's any new developments. As far as I know, there's no cure now.
There's control, and steroids do carry risk. We can't say how much they would shorten life, but if that 15 pounds is an overweight 15 pounds, regardless of whether there's any dental or oral disease there or not, getting your cat down to a lean weight would do a lot for his health.
Okay, JC, thank you.
The steroid caused the weight gain?
They can aggravate it, yes,
mm-hmm.
But you don't have to be fat and be on steroids.
He's not fat. He's big.
He's
huge.
Big.
Mm-hmm.
He's huge.
Yeah, and he looks healthy otherwise. He's beautiful.
I bet he is.
Okay. Thanks, JC. Good
okay,
luck.
Then. Thank you.
Take
Bye.
Care. Email from Sarah. She writes, I have a 4-year-old cat named Tucker. I had worked in pet retail for about 6 years and frequently met people who said that their cats never reacted to toys filled with catnip. The common problem with these toys is that they sit on shelves for a long time and seem to go stale. Maybe I'm no botanist. I'd like to throw out a product recommendation if possible. The Yao catnip toys are amazing. They're expensive, but it's because they're packed completely solid with catnip rather than the fibers and tiny pinch of nip found in most toys. This brand of toys will have Tucker rolling around about on the floor in ecstasy, kicking the toys, licking them until they turn green from the catnip inside, etc. They're so fun. Everyone who loves to watch their cats look like goofs should give this one a try. Okay, thanks for the recommendation, Sarah. And from Katie on Facebook, she writes, I recently adopted a two-year-old who had spent her whole life in a shelter. She's such a sweetie, but she has feline herpes and constantly has a runny nose, sneezing with discharge and some wheezing. This is something I have never experienced before. I give her an aminone acid supplement, L-lysine, every day. Is there anything else I can do to help her? I also take her to the bathroom with me when I shower to help clear her sinuses. Poor little thing.
Oh, absolutely one of the chronic problems that we dislike seeing most, being quite honest. Chronic upper respiratory infections, if that's truly what it is, and no foreign body. There is, with that first infection, there can be changes within the turbinates, the linings within the nose. And so there is disease that is harbored and problems that exist there. And certainly we go ahead and use things like antibiotics and whatever we can to support health, make sure, again, negative leukemia, negative FIV for that. Just stay up to date on your health as much as possible.
Okay. Dorothy in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Dorothy.
Hi. I have a comment and then a question. When you were talking about introducing the cats, I had a mother-son. I brought the mother home, and she was in the house a week, and then I thought, well, she needs company. I'll go get her son. I thought it would be, oh, mom, oh, son. It was anything but. She looked at him like, what is he doing here? I left him behind. Anyway, they're fine now. They're about 6 or 7 years old now. One of the things they do that just drives me insane, they hunt on the counters. I can't leave anything out. They're very well fed. I do not free feed, but I feed them 2 to 3 times a day. They get an excellent kibble. Plus, I give them meat because I have dogs. I feed the dogs cooked meat and cheese, yogurt, cottage cheese.
So you want to get them off the counter?
Yeah. They're into everything, but they have an excellent diet.
Okay. So they don't need anything, but they're. What do you say, Tony?
Well, I'd say what they need is something else to do, and. Climbing and hunting are the two most natural things that cats do. What I heard was that it's just they're not doing it where you want them to do it. So the trick is to find a place where it's okay for them to climb and hunt and do those kinds of things, and make that so attractive that they will stay off the counters. And at the same time, we're going to make the counters unattractive. So to make the counters unattractive, there's a number of things you can do. You can put sticky tape on them. You can take carpet runner and turn it upside down so those little punji sticks on the bottom of it are up, because cats don't like that. You can put aluminum foil on it, and people know about how to do those things. What they're less likely to do is to think, what can I offer the cat, a climbing structure or someplace else that they can engage in this natural activity? And so then what's really important is to praise them for doing that. So the kinds of snacks that were mentioned can be fed to the cats in another place. So they start looking there for reinforcement rather than being on the counters.
Thank you, Dorothy.
I feed them on that, and I have tried some of the deterrents, but they're just two hunters. They're terrible.
Mm-hmm. They need a better alternative.
Okay. All right. I'll decorate their cat tree more.
There you go.
Okay. Thanks.
Thanks, Dorothy.
Bye-bye.
An email from Randy, and this email brings up comments that have been made by our birding experts that have been on the show many times and how frustrated they are by this. Randy writes, my cat is a killer. She will bring home 2 to 3 kills a day if she's out for a while. I'm talking moles, mice, birds, toads, squirrels, rabbits, and other. She will place these by the front door until we throw them away, but not always. I've had neighbors complain about Lovey attacking birds at their bird feeders and eating half of them and then leaving the rest in the yard. My question is, should I leave her in the house or keep letting her out and have the neighbors complain?
Well,
and we're both going well because having been an outside cat, and enjoyed the pleasures of hunting, making converting the cat to an indoor cat may not work out. Some cats make your life hell when you try to do that. But if you're talking about saving the mole population and the bird population, the only solution is to be indoors or to develop a structure in the backyard. I'll just give one name. There's a product called Perfect Fence, P-U-R-R, Perfect Fence, that you can put in your backyard that will allow your cat to be outside but confined to your yard, and they won't be leaving.
What about cats on leashes?
So
you get them outside and they get the fresh air,
Some cats can handle leashes really well. It's another behavior for cats, so people just need to teach them how to do it and what it means and learn about it. And you can go to YouTube and learn how to do those kinds of things, mm-hmm. and to manufacturers' websites. Some cats really like them. And people just need to realize that they're responsible for the cat's safety when they're out there. I mean, I've seen people that have had cats a little too close to dogs that they mm-hmm. don't know and those kinds of things. So people need to be quite mindful about what they're doing. But I've certainly seen it work very well.
Okay. Let's see. Hillary, where are you? Hillary, in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I'm a first-time caller. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome, Hillary.
I had a question that I'll get to in a minute, but I actually do actively put my cat out on a leash, which is what you were just talking about a second ago. It took about 6 months to train him up to tolerating the leash itself, and then another 2 or 3 months to get him comfortable on the lead, but he loves being in the backyard and will follow direction and things like that with attention and training.
Good
he
job.
Loves it. Absolutely yeah. adores it. So I really like the fact that you were talking about it because people act like I'm nuts.
You're not.
I'm like, well, you know, this way I can control where he goes, and he gets that exposure that he really, really enjoys.
Mm-hmm.
But my question I called about is he had about a year and a half ago a urinary tract blockage with the crystal in his bladder. It got really bad. It took about a week and of hospitalization and things like that. And they had me switch him on to wet food only. They said if he wouldn't tolerate the wet food, I'd have to get veterinary prescription dry food. And so far, he's been doing really good with the wet food, but I've heard some scares about recalls. There's also that big movement for having things that don't have grain supplement in it and various things. So I've switched to a higher cost pet store brand to try and hopefully get a higher quality into him, but that can get expensive. So I'm kind of wondering, with this movement of the natural foods and the no grains or extra stuff in the wet food and all this, you know, current in vogue thing, am I hurting him or am I helping him? Is it worth the cost?
Okay.
Well, that's an interesting question, and I think you phrase it very well, that it's a currently in vogue thing. The evidence, when people have looked at it very carefully, is that if it makes any difference at all, it's too small for any of us to find in almost all cases, particularly for canned foods, which have very little carbohydrate in them, very little grain in them to begin with. So as long as the diet that you were feeding was a satisfactory diet designed for cats at the stage of life that your cat is, the ability of any of us to look at the cat and tell what he was eating just based on how he's doing is zero. So that, and that said, people can certainly make choices for different foods. I mean, some people like to eat at McDonald's and some like to eat at Morton's, and you can either be healthy or unhealthy either place. It's mostly a matter of volume and frequency.
Right. Okay, Hillary?
Does that help?
Yeah, a lot. Thank you.
Sure.
All right. Thanks, Hillary. Thanks for the call.
Have a good day.
Julian in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. Hi, Julian.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very well.
I'm calling because we have two six-year-old cats we adopted 5 years ago, and we put in the same house since. And we're actually moving, so I'm wondering what the best way is to get them adapted to the move most easily.
Are you moving? Are you being moved?
We're having movers, yeah.
I think it helps, again, because cats feel happiest when they are not experiencing a great deal of change. packed, and all those boxes can be very stressful. If you're going to have all of the packing done at one time by the movers, if you can take the cats out of the house to a boarded for a day at a veterinary hospital or to friends if they're used to that. So that's at the one end of it. At the other end, I always like to make sure that I'm taking my cat into at least one room that looks like it's an abode. It's unpacked. It has familiar furniture. It has familiar smells in it.
When you move them to the new location.
When you move into the new place, you have stresses at both end of this.
Okay. Julian, makes sense. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. Thank you.
All right, good luck.
Take care.
Jenny in Chagrin Falls, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much. I'm calling because we adopted a cat at the end of January who turned out to have been dumped at the shelter with megacolon. By the time we got him, he had apparently not pooped in 10 weeks. He had a piece of poop in him that was wider than his wider than his pelvis. And we got him roto-rooted, and we're now thinking about surgery because he is on lactulose. We cannot get the sisapride. Apparently, it's not available in the state of Ohio right now. And he's doing okay, except for he doesn't like the lactulose. He's taking 16 mils a day, and we cannot squirt it down his throat. It's just not worth that. And he doesn't seem to like wet food. We've tried, golly, I think probably about 60 different flavors by now. We keep a list. And we are considering surgery. But until then, I had never heard of megacolon until we took him to the vet.
Well, I never heard of it until just now. So first, we only have a few minutes left. Jenny, I want to hear what it is from the experts. And thanks for your call and any advice you might have.
Megacolon is when the muscle of the colon is no longer exerting the force it needs to evacuate the cat's colon. And so it helps to be on a low-fiber food, definitely a low-fiber food. There is a product that your cat might find more acceptable, PEG 350. A brand name is Miralax. A lot of clients find that if they sprinkle an eighth to a quarter teaspoon on their food once or twice a day, that they can affect what lactulose was doing without the bad taste of the lactulose.
Fantastic. So an eighth to a quarter of a teaspoon, you say?
Yes.
Okay, I can do that. And
Sisapride can be compounded in a pharmacy out of the state.
Okay, we haven't looked into that yet. We've been, but it's terribly expensive. I also wanted to know, he's apparently when he was dumped, they said he was about 5 years old. And we're wondering whether it would be worthwhile to have the surgery or whether that just seems a little drastic.
That's pretty much a personal decision.
Okay. Thank you, Jenny, for your call. Good luck.
Thanks.
We're just about out of time. I want to thank my guest, Nikki Hurd. She's a veterinarian and feline specialist from the Northwest Animal Hospital in Columbus. Nikki, thanks for joining us today.
You're very welcome.
And also Charles Anthony Buffington. He's a professor of clinical nutrition in the Department of Veterinary Clinical Sciences at OSU. Thanks for joining us, Tony.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And thanks for listening. We'll have links to various aspects of our conversation today about cats. You can go to WOSU.org/allsides and get the information there. Thanks for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus. Streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7. NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.
Support for 89.7 comes from Montgomery & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, offering perspective in a time of economic uncertainty to help grow and maintain wealth. Details at themontgomerysolution.com.